Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are in content. We're going into content. We're still in marketing at this point because there's still some stuff I want to cover. And I kind of was hoping to be able to get connected with Charles, the gentleman who contacted me regarding the bankruptcy laws and the inconsistency when it comes down to bankruptcies for those who have taken student loans. Because bottom line, you should be able to claim those loans as bankrupt. The federal government, of course, as always, has made it up as they went along because the Constitution requires that there be a consistency. A consistency in bankruptcy laws, that they are to apply a uniform rule of bankruptcy. So everybody can go bankrupt and actually get out from underneath debt. But the problem is, you can't get out from underneath their debt. In other words, if you owe the federal government money, then especially in these types of loans, these student loans, there's no way. That haunts you until you're dead and it comes after your estate. Really quick, I had a friend who worked for me, and this guy was so educated, and he was still in school working on his doctorate at the time. He may have his second doctorate by now, because when he started down this path of getting education, well, he couldn't pull out because he was never in a position to be able to afford to pay that loan off because the circumstances. As some people see, you know, if you get education but you can't capitalize on that by getting a job, then what do? You just sit there and let that debt linger and pay it when you really can't afford to? So he had a entry-level job, and he went through this educational process. And I don't want to say entry-level, but it was a lower skill education level type of job working for me. And he was trapped because he was not able to find a job that he could leverage all of this extra education, his master's and his doctorate and so forth. And anyway, it came down to a point where he actually had to get divorced from his wife and separate, you know, all of his estate to where he really became a vessel of nothing. So that when he died, that debt would be expunged with his death instead of going after his estate, because there was just that much debt that he had incurred. Now, of course, he got his scolding from me by just going into a contract and taking debt and continuing down this path, basically defrauding people. And so this person will remain nameless. But when I say defrauding, here he is going into contracts with under this guise of getting education and so forth without the real intent of ever paying that back. And so we need to bring back debtor's prison. We really need to bring back debtor's prison. And that's just to allow people to have a process of, I'll just say, creating a level of compensation because if you can't pay the debt, then you should have to, I believe, in a legal process, because I truly believe if you're not being held accountable for your behavior, if you behave badly and you can actually walk away without any real harm, and I'm not talking about the embarrassment of the fact that you can't pay your bills and you went bankrupt. There are people that do this perpetually. My point is that those people who go down this path and they want to expunge all of this debt, then they go out and they do it again and they do it again, or people that they just don't have any remorse whatsoever for their good name and their honor and their integrity. And I believe the best way to restoring a level of honor and integrity is by having people serve some form of time for those who they go down the path of bankruptcy and they cannot do good on that debt. There should be some level of, incarceration so that you at least understand that you did something wrong. Now, as it has been explained to me, and as I completely understand, the legal system has moved from a system that is designed to maintain a higher level of behavior in society to a system where the courts and the legal system itself is a money-making mill. The reason why they have and have moved everything in the direction that they have based on admiralty courts and moved away from common law and these other things is because it is about money. Anyway, and I'm actually going to let John Gentry talk about that because he just recently brought this up and he points out, you know, that the court is there to try to make sure that they're constantly bringing in revenue to cover their cost and to basically expand their presence in the marketplace, if you kind of understand what I'm saying. And our legal system shouldn't be that way. I don't believe our framers actually tried to create a system that we were completely dependent upon people with, you know, titles of nobility, such as lawyers and esquires and so forth, and people that, you know, judges and those types of bureaucrats that want to strangle us into basically saying, hey, you know, that you can get justice, but you have to be willing to pay for it. What? Anyway, we've got a lot of things to clean up, and Republic Review really is the only process that is going to force everybody, at least the federal government and all levels of government, into compliance with the U.S. Constitution and forcing states to get realigned with their own constitutions. And we're going to get into that because that's the next level of content we're going to cover. We're going to go into, we're diving into the resolutions. We'll probably do this week, just due to the fact that some of the topics that we're going to cover today and possibly tomorrow will probably tap me out for what I believe are those things that get you really engaged. One of the things that we need you to do is get engaged. If you don't want to, you know, watch this beautiful experiment of liberty just wash through our hands and just slip away, then you have to get engaged. As a matter of fact, as I said right after Independence Day last week, when it comes down to people talking and recognizing that, you know, we've lost our moral compass, we've lost our spiritual guide, and and everybody that believes that, you know, we have to turn to prayer is wrong. We have to actually turn to prayer and then stand up and act. We must, because in all honesty, the Lord, he expects some level of sanctification. You know, okay, so we're repenting and we're, you know, we're sorely praying unto the Lord where our knees are, you know, scabbed and bleeding and asking for him to help restore this country. Well, he's not going to do it. He's going to help you do it, but you have to get up and act. So the key point that everybody is missing is you can't just depend on the Lord to do it for you. We can't depend on it just happening. We all have to get engaged. This is why I bring to you the different organizations that you can get involved with that will help us solve these problems if you're in the problem-solving mode. If you're just wanting to be a part of the problem, then continue doing nothing and doing what you're doing because we will go off this precipice. The question I have is when? And so this is the big question I ask everybody. How much time do you think we really have? Look at where we are. Look how close we are to the precipice. Look at the next potential devastating crisis, and it'll be a financial one, that will throw us into the arms of global governance and communism. Anyway, you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic history and academic evidence of why we're in this position and what we have to do, and we give you the academic evidence-based solutions as to what must be done if we're going to preserve our Constitution. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And we do have, you know, I know I got a lot of, at least I have some level of JBS leadership listening to this, but I believe we also have quite a few, I'll just say, progressives that, you know, kind of have their heart in, you know, the conservative side, like my friend Harry, and I just like to call him out. Harry, I hope you're listening, because there are Harrys out there that really voted for Biden because they thought Trump, you know, he was a misogynist, you know, he was a bad guy. But it's better to have a pedophile in office and a family of pedophilia and a family of corruption, you know. Like, I get it. Trump had his level of corruption. He helped build the swamp. I mean, in his own confession during the 2016 campaign, he basically told everybody in the audience that everybody on that stage he had contributed and bought influence with them. And that's how the game was played. So here's a man that was equally culpable in not only, you know, designing, but supporting the swamp. Anyway, we've got a comment line, 425-270-5416. If you've got a comment or question, just call. We will get back to you as soon as possible. And, you know, you don't even have to really articulate a full comment. If you believe this is a dialogue that needs to occur, then just give us the basics on what you think we need to talk about, and we'll give you a call back. Anyway, we're at a hard break, and when we come back, we're going to dive into some content, some marketing, as well as doing a go back real quick on Tucker Carlson. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's just dive forward, because we already know that as citizens, I harp on this all the time, you should probably feel equally and uniformly berated and I'll just say beaten down by me when I keep on continuing to remind you of your birthright roles and responsibilities. When I say birthright roles and responsibilities, as a U.S. citizen, you are obligated to do some very specific things in supporting the Constitution. Anybody who becomes naturalized as a citizen must take an oath, and that oath stands upon all of those who are born into this system with a birthright. If you are committing rebellion, you have no let's just say there's no guarantee. There is nothing that says that we have to, you cannot be denied your citizenship. And as a matter of fact, we need to start doing that. We need to start stripping people of their citizenship. We need to revisit the Tory Acts in getting rid of those who want to destroy the system. They shouldn't be able to live here. They shouldn't be able to go unfettered and not be identified and made as harmless as possible. Now, so there's some people that can stay here that, you know, they just, they don't get it. They don't understand. They're continually going to vote for people who want to institute a theocracy or people who want to institute changes in our government that is unconstitutional and unconstitutionally founded. The only way we can start making things like making pork illegal for commerce, for some businesses to be able to sell bacon and those types of things, the only way we can do that is to be able to amend the Constitution by taking away the rights of commerce and taking away these rights and then establishing the theocracy of Sharia law or those types of things. And you can't do that without 38 states getting on board. I mean, the design of this system was so well done. This is why we have everything we need to restore our constitutional republic. And so I hope you appreciate the fact of where we are and where we're going as a nation and what we have to make it very quick, or to actually to be able to act upon quickly these problems and change them for the better, so that we can actually preserve liberty for our children. So let me first do a breakdown as I go back into talking about Tucker Carlson, because I had this interesting conversation with Douglas Gibbs, which I'll get into right after this, and I want to give him credit because he's the one that gave me this reference. I'm not sure if he came up with it, but he gave me this reference of a patriot, a PAY-triot. In other words, this person, a person that is a PAY-triot, is a patriot who is in it for the money. They can't do anything unless there's something on the table. They need compensation and so forth. Now, I will say that the framers were compensated for their time and for their travel costs and those types of things, but they were not paid, you know, for in profits. They weren't paid in a perspective where it was something that they were lining their pockets with gold. When they were providing service for the states, when they were providing some level of service, then they were compensated when they were at the Constitutional Convention. But that was official duties and official capacities. When Madison sat down and wrote the Virginia Resolutions in 1798, he did not get compensated. At least not to my knowledge. He wasn't serving in government at that point in time. So here is something that he did, and it was self-sacrifice. And that is what we were going into the break about. Sacrifice itself sanctifies the work that you're doing. I believe that when people start sacrificing, people actually start contributing into the problem, and by helping, whether that's, you know, getting the word out, getting educated and repeating the word, or articulating and leading, whatever it takes. But don't do it with your hand out and say, well, if you want me to do something, you want me to learn this, you got to pay me. I'm sorry. That type of patriot is actually a part of the problem. And some of those patriots are, you know, actually conservatives. They're not necessarily rhinos. They're in it for the money. And so this is why we focused on the PAY-triot versus the regular patriot in moving forward and putting context to Tucker Carlson. So here's the go back or the standing question that I have. Is Tucker Carlson a PAY-triot, or is he as a conservative entertainer, or is he a real patriot? That's the question. I truly believe the guy really cares, but you know, you never know, because these guys are really good at putting on a facade, putting on a front. You know, just like entertainers, just like singers. I mean, these guys really seem genuine, like Bruce Springsteen really believes in freedom and liberty, when actually he's a huge supporter of communism. So, you know, we don't understand how people can actually be a part of a lying facade, but that is the profession of acting. That is the profession. Even lawyers have to put on a facade because their job is to do and obtain a certain outcome, not to be fully honest and to be, you know, fully forthright and outright. I just keep forthright and honest. Lawyers do not make money identifying that their clients are guilty. They have a requirement to work in getting that client off by some technicality or what have you. This is why most people, and I believe everybody that listens to the show, looks at these types of people as a part of the bigger problem. And we have to be able to take back the system to be able to put these people into a position where they can't harm us anymore. Because I'll tell you, with common law, we will not have as many suits that we have that we're dealing with and enriching these lawyers and the court system or this court market-based system that we have. Anyway, so I had this long conversation with Douglas Gibbs this weekend. I really wanted to record it. I love talking with Douglas Gibbs. We argue all the time, but we don't argue necessarily because we disagree. We argue on the details and nuances. And so what we'll probably do is we're probably going to do this in a Skype, and we'll just repeat on our own volition and on our own, you know, engagement, because it's not like I want to have a script or anything, but a lot of times when we talk, he really believes that the Bill of Rights is not applied by the 14th Amendment. And so in this conversation that we had, I finally was able to get him to look at it from my perspective, and I believe most of you already understand, I truly believe that the 14th Amendment was a part of the grand design by our Lord, because I truly believe that we need the 14th Amendment to be able to move this republic forward. So the challenge, this goes back to a really old conversation. The challenge is to Mr. Gibbs and anybody who believes that the 14th Amendment is a bad amendment, then I challenge you to tell me which protections that the people obtained from the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. List them. You know, your right of freedom of expression, your right of religious expression, your right to petition, those individual expressions and those individual immunities and privileges, your right to bear arms as a part of the militia and the defense of our Constitution. All of these types of things that are within the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, write them down. Tell me what you believe out of all of these things that we have protected by the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, which one of these things do you feel is really bad? Your freedom of expression? Now, I want to be clear. When I was talking to Mr. Gibbs, I was telling him that you don't include the Establishment Clause, because the Establishment Clause, or just, you know, the state being able to set up a church, that's not included because that's not an individual privilege or immunity. That is an institutional privilege and or a state privilege, because the state has the privilege of actually establishing and creating a direct or a symbiotic relationship with a community service group or a church. So anyway, as we were talking, I said, well, just create this list and you tell me which are bad. You know, your protection from illegal search and seizure, that's a part of the Bill of Rights. Your right to a trial by jury, are those bad things? Your right of common law. And 9 times out of 10, I've never gotten trapped to actually go through these things, but 9 times out of 10, you know, that's why he obfuscates. He can't really point to any of these things as bad. He just says with a broad brush that applying the Bill of Rights to the states is bad. And I'm going, well, it doesn't include labor. It doesn't include, you know, all of these different, you know, markets, healthcare, and those types of things. What it does do is it protects you and your individual rights. And so, anyway, back to the 14th Amendment. In finally getting him to realize that when we look at the debates in the Congressional Globe, because that's really what it boils down to. When you look at the opponents and the proponents for the bill, you have to highlight the text with Green for the proponents, Mr. Howard, and, you know, selling his part of Section 3 and identifying and stating what this means. And then when you read the comments and the debates from the opponents, you highlight those in, you know, a red or a yellow, because those are the comments that need to be rejected. When you want to understand the 14th Amendment, you reject the yellow and you only read the green. Why? Because this is a contractual debate. This is about a contract. And when they accept the new words or this new amendment to this compact, you have to look at how it was defined by the proponents, not how it was claimed by the opponents. And so we'll be right back with a little more details on this and the epiphany I think we got with Mr. Gibbs right after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so whenever you're dealing with contract and contract law, you have to look at the contract and or words injected like an amendment and how they were defined and how they set the terms and who defined and who set the terms. You cannot embrace the people that were actually lying or the people that were making outlandish assertions and or coming along and saying, we reject this. And then it goes to the floor. And in the 14th Amendment, very specifically, when it went to the floor, it was passed in both the House and the Senate by the two-thirds majority required to forward this to the states for ratification. What that means is that everybody that was trying to deviate, trying to change, and trying to inject regarding the changing of the language. So a good example is Section 3, because like I said, I went at it with a couple of loggerheads on a Constitution. I think it's the Institute on the Constitution's page. And these gentlemen were basically saying outright that the 14th Amendment, Section 3, only applied to the punishment of the rebels during the Civil War. And I go, the language doesn't even support that. The language was clearly changed so that it was not considered to be a strict punishment against the rebels, that it was a new law that would hold any public servant accountable if they violated their oath of office. That's how it was explained by Mr. Howard. He called it moral perjury, Senator Howard. So when you look at the comments in the Congressional Globe, you have to highlight who are those who are the proponents. Now, they're everybody else, the people that are, you know, basically selling this amendment in both houses, those people are very few. And then all the other comments are people that could be at the beginning against it and then coming on board. A good example of that was Samuel Adams in Massachusetts. He was against the Constitution until Mr. Hancock recommended that they provide amendments. And then he was actually, wow, this is a good idea. And he voted for it. So he's not, he was one of those people that, you know, was going either way. He was against it at first, but he ultimately voted for it. So his opinions regarding the debate and any injections that he had was not one of clarity, but it was one of questioning. It was one of challenging, but it was not providing terms and definitions to the compact or to the particular amendment going into the compact. This is all contract law, folks, and it's not difficult. If somebody is articulating what a particular line means, what this clause in this amendment means, then that becomes legally binding if accepted. If it's rejected, then it's gone. The amendment never happened and it was rejected. But that's not the case. And I think Mr. Douglas Gibbs finally got this when I said, look, there may have been a lot of opposition. As a matter of fact, every time you look at, you know, let's just look at a recent sitting of a Supreme Court justice under Trump. How many people and how many comments, you know, dominated, were the comments against these progressives, or the comments against each of these Supreme Court justice nominees, were the preponderance of them pro or were they opponents? In other words, were they proponents for and supporting and asking questions? No, if you read through the majority of the questions and comments, 9 times out of 10, they were for the proponents and progressives trying to challenge and getting them removed. Now, there were a few that came back to the proponents and said, okay, we understand this or that and provide a little clarity. But bottom line, the majority of the comments, as Professor Lash points out in his scholarly study of the 14th Amendment, the majority of the comments were people that were against it. And it was the same people. And so it's hard for you to keep track of this. This is why when you go through and you actually print out the ratification debates, you print out each of these times that a portion of the compact is being argued, and you highlight with green those who are arguing for this change. And then you highlight with orange or yellow or, you know, a negative color, red, and you highlight all the text so that people understand, okay, this is the stuff that was rejected. Don't even read it. Don't waste my time on this. You have to show me those who are selling this. But these guys don't get it. They say, oh, well, you know, we can define things any way we want to as we move down this road. No. When the terms and definitions are provided in the ratification process of a contract, those terms and definitions are legally bound to the compact. You can't change them without making a change into the compact and redefining what those terms mean. And that's never happened, my friends. So this is why it's really important to just stop looking at the Constitution as this article or this parchment, piece of paper that requires constant interpretation by scholarly people. It doesn't. The scholarly people at the time of ratification gave us all the clarity. This is why it is so important, and this is why my conversation with Mr. Gibbs was really more focused on canonizing and definitizing the Constitution. And so as I explained to him why we have to do this, and this is what I basically had this very similar conversation to Mr. Gentry, and I'll introduce him to you in just a second. The reason why we have to do this is we have to remove the opportunity of interpretation, completely, if at all possible, going through the ratification debates, if there is anything there, then we can actually, you know, definitize that the Commerce Clause isn't anything what they have been interpreting the Commerce Clause to be. The Necessary and Proper Clause, the Exclusive Legislation Clause, the Supremacy Clause, the General Defense and Welfare Clause, blah, 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 blah. They have been redefining and interpreting these things when it was purely and precisely denned, was precisely identified and delineated within the ratification debates what these things really meant. And so, by so doing this, we take away any justice's ability to redefine what a line means. Well, we see this line meaning, you know, like Blackmun's emanations from penumbras. I bring up that very particular line because why is he talking about, you know, solar light activity, you know, such as the eclipses and so forth, and these penumbras or emanations of light from penumbras? Look it up. Look up a penumbra. Look up an umbra. Look up these things that regard the solar eclipse or the eclipsing of light in our solar system or in, you know, in the universe. And you go, what did that have to do with a person's right to be able to go get an abortion? These guys are very good at obfuscating and trying to change your perception in moving the ball in the direction they want that ball to go. The Constitution does not allow a free-flowing ball. It's either within the terms of the contract or it's not. And every time we allow this concept of interpretation, every time a court or a state goes into a federal court over an issue that is not enumerated in the Constitution, that state has surrendered its sovereignty already. So anyway, back to my conversation with Doug. He completely agrees. I believe I hope to be recording our conversation so that we can talk about the importance and why we both believe that there needs to be a definitizing and canonizing of the Constitution. I also had this conversation with Paul Venable, who is the chair of the state of Missouri for the Constitution Party. He wants to move this ball forward with the Constitution Party and other people in the Constitution Party. So they're getting, let's just say, organized. I don't think that these people realize how easy this can be. And I don't think people realize, you know, the benefit of doing this. Because, folks, why is this important? Because we want to take away the court, the progressives, and anybody else's ability to try to, you know, obfuscate or actually try to obscure, try to change the real meaning of the Constitution by injecting their opinions and their interpretations. If we remove any opportunity that they can say, oh, well, this is what this line means. Hold on, no. I've got 20 definitions from the ratification debates on what that line means. And you tell me that you can't accept either of those? They're all in harmony. And when we start doing this, and when you start reading how the Constitution was definitized, oh my goodness, it'll be done. Because now everybody will know what is the Constitution, what it really states, and what we can do about it. And that, once we have definitized this Constitution, then it takes away and it allows us to start moving forward with Republic Review. It allows us to actually delineate, well, okay, so here are the powers. Where's the power for energy? Where's the power for education? Where's the power for labor? Where's the power for health and human services and all housing? All of these things that they have usurped. And more importantly, now it allows us to show that the money that they're spending on unconstitutional powers is defrauding, is an attempt to defraud. Now, you only become defrauded when you actually have completely accepted. And so have you completely accepted the spending on education, the spending on health and human services? I say not, because you've never been asked to buy into. And as a matter of fact, now that the evidence is coming out, that we know this is all false and fraud, now we can actually say, there we go. Now we have proof. We'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so really the point that I'm trying to make here, and I apologize if this is if this isn't very clear for me to articulate this, because I'm always ad-libbing. The fact of the matter is that if it has been clearly delineated that the federal government's jurisdiction is tied to the enumerated powers, that means that that's the only thing they can spend money on. And so if they're spending money on something that they do not have the power to do, and even if the states say, well, we can't challenge this because we don't believe we can. We've been lied to for so long about so many things that even the federal, even the state systems who have been lied and culpable, all of this has been completely lost. And now that we have the light of day in understanding the contract and how tied and how tight and tightly tied these powers are, and that they can't assume any new powers. Now we know that all of these folks that have been in government are culpable and must be held accountable. You're Republicans, you're Democrats. This is why we need to completely clean house. Now, I believe that, and as a Christian, I believe that we should give people an opportunity to do the right thing. I believe in first and finals. I believe that anybody that has made a mistake, because this is how they were taught, this is because everything was known this way. When we definitize the Constitution, they have a choice. They either support the Constitution or they continue with their paradigm. If they continue with their paradigm, they're gone. If they have a change of heart and they fully support the Constitution moving forward, then I'm okay with allowing them some latitude, but only those who have always challenged, like any governor that didn't even question that they had no authority to take away your right of commerce and religious expression, all these other things, and they just moved forward with these things and never went to a lawyer, their attorney, hey, can I do this? If they had no reservations about stealing your civil rights, then I have no pity for them. I understand that, you know, we're not talking about, you know, banishing them to you know, the lake of fire and brimstone. We're just talking about removing them from public service. You just can't be a public servant anymore because you've proven you will act as a tyrant and you'll be despotic in your actions. So anyway, now let me get into John Gentry. I was introduced to John Gentry this last week. And I was hoping to call him this weekend, but instead he called me on Saturday morning, and we had this long conversation. Who is he? Well, he's a huge advocate, and surprisingly, he doesn't know Bob Schultz and Bob Schultz's position on the First Amendment, the First Amendment right of petition. But here's a guy that has been using the First Amendment right of petition in Tennessee. He's removed public servants. He has, utilized this, and he considers himself probably, the foremost authority. And that's great. That doesn't mean that there aren't others. But this is great because, as I've been telling you, your right and your privilege and your responsibility of using the First Amendment right of petition to demand government at any level reasonably respond. And what I mean by that is legally respond within the framework of the Constitution. In other words, you challenge them on this invasion. Their only response is within what the Constitution says they have to do. In other words, you challenge Congress, you challenge any government entity, that be your state or what have you, on the legality and what's going on with this invasion, then their only response can be that they have to work in stopping the invasion and removing the invaders. Because bottom line, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that we're supposed to support and allow them to basically assimilate or, become in shadows, living in the shadow. No. The Constitution says that we will be protected from an invasion, and it states what Congress must do during an invasion. They must deploy the militia down to the southern border, and they need to stop the invasion and remove the invaders. There's no other interpretation other than how it was told at the time of ratification. And it was very, very clear that no form of invasion. They understood, and it was even brought up, that these invaders don't have to be military combatants. These invaders can be political combatants, social combatants. There are different forms of hostility that can be waged in warfare, cyber combatants. And so we have an invasion of cyber warfare that is coming through our internet into from Russia. Do you know we can actually deal with this as well? Do you know that they have a responsibility to deal with this? And they're not. The federal government is deliberately kicking the can down the road. And they should be leading the states in actually shutting down all the addresses from where this stuff is coming from. Cut off all ties with China over the internet. Cut off all ties with Russia and every other government that allows those governments to permeate through their internet into America. We start shutting these things down. You shut those IPs down, they can't get routed into America. It's done. Now what are we doing? Now we're actually not dealing with hostility. If you don't have the physical presence, this is one of the things I loved and I learned about Cisco, is Cisco has a huge back door to all of their switches. But the concept is that you have to have physical presence to be able to do this. You can basically power cycle that, hook up to a serial comms on the back end or within the device itself, physically connect to it, and you can backdoor and take over that entire switch. But the whole point is that you have to have physical security in guarding that so that you never lose control. And the point is that when we're dealing with external cyber threats, when we're dealing with external invaders who are coming here, we have all of the power within the Constitution in dealing with this, and so do your state. So anyway, what we're going to do is we're going to actually have John Gentry come on, and we're going to have a conversation with him later on this week. I would hope to record this because he doesn't know much about Republic Review, but he didn't know that I knew as much and am a big supporter of all of the tools within the Constitution, and the petition being one of them. He sees the petition, a lot like Bob Schultz, as the only mechanism, the mechanism that we have to restoring our constitutional republic. Well, not really, because we have a hybrid constitutional republic, and we have sovereigns. The people being sovereigns, he also, and so we I can't find a place where we really disagree. Now, it doesn't matter. I mean, not everybody equally agrees all the time, but it sure seems like, as I run into these folks like Douglas Gibbs and John Gentry, John Durash, and all of these people are true patriots because they are getting involved and they're acting, not because they're being paid to act and to do a very specific job. They are doing everything they can to restoring the law and order, the rule of law, and the Constitution as the supreme law of the land. So anyway, now let me get into a little bit of marketing. And when we come back in our next episode, we're going to move forward on this marketing as well. And so this basically goes back to, you know, some information regarding cybercrime and cybersecurity. A hacker group with ties to Russia is demanding $70 million in Bitcoin to unfreeze computers at as many as 1,500 companies around the world. Now, these are evil hacker groups known for allegedly extorting $11 million from the meat. These are Russian evil hacking groups, but they're known for extorting the $11 million from the meat suppliers, JBS, over the Memorial Day weekend. And they're basically scrambled. They've basically announced that they will unscramble all the affected devices in return for their ransom. Now, this is the same thing as warfare, my friends. And when they connect to us, it's not like they have physical access to America. So how do they gain access? Well, they gain access through the networks. Networks, there are firewalls, there are routing protocols. We can shut down all communications over the internet with Russia and only allow a very specific, you know, set of routing with maybe the Russian government. But we have the ability, if you talk to any tech-savvy person, see, the question is, why do we have it wide open? We already know that there are bad players. There are players that are trying to do this, and they are harming us. They shut down production. Why is it that nobody is actually talking about, let's close it all down, close those bad players, those addresses, those... Even if they're spoofing, when we find out, and they're spoofing on another country. So, in other words, if another country isn't policing and protecting their integrity and their behavior on the internet, then they get cut off too. We need to start actually using the force that we have in protecting ourselves. Well, I mean, do you really stand there like Chesty Puller in a line of fire and actually take a bullet because you want to take a bullet in every campaign? If you don't know who Chesty Puller is, look him up. He was a well-decorated Marine, and every Marine loves the man, but it wasn't the smartest thing to take a bullet in every campaign by just standing up and taking one. And so it is my opinion that when you're being fired upon, you do everything to, you know, suppress, stop, and remove their ability to fire upon you. And we have the ability to do that technology-wise. But nobody ever wants to go down that path to doing that. I don't care if we actually shut off our comms to China and U.S. corporations can't communicate with them anymore. That's tough. Get out of China. You have no business being there in the first place. That is a communist country that is hostile towards America in every way. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.